How's it going, everybody? Dieter Kurtenbach, joined by Mark Medina. We're at Staples Center in the photographer's room. It's a beautiful couch in a photographer's room. Who would have guessed it? The first class accommodations we get down here in Los Angeles, and the Warriors jump out to an early lead in game three, go coast to coast, beat the, it doesn't matter what they beat them by. They had a 36-point lead at one point, comprehensive, overwhelming victory for the Golden State Warriors in Game 3. And my only takeaway on this contest, that order was restored to the galaxy in Game 3. The Warriors, of course, blowing that 31-point lead in Game 2. Steph Curry said apparently everyone literally forgot how to play basketball. It's the best reason I've been able to hear yet on as to how that happened. They did not let up a 31-point lead in Game 3. I can't imagine that they will do anything of the sort in Game 4 or in Game 5. It feels like this series is very much over. We've seen the best that the Clippers have to offer. We've seen the worst that the Warriors have to offer. I don't think we're going to see either of those two things again, and that means that Golden State, at least from my vantage point, is going to run away with it. But I want to hear what you have to say, Mark Medina.
Yeah, you basically hit on it. I was calling it after Game 2 that the Warriors would be upset. They still see the Clippers as the Clippers because Doc Rivers is on the sideline, and that they wouldn't leave anything unturned. So, you know, is there really much to take away from this? Yes and no. No in the sense that this shouldn't be a surprise, but I think there are some cool little narratives like, hey, Kevin Durant's shooting a lot of points, getting 38. I think the more interesting development, because KD does what he does, but the more interesting development was that center spot. Like, there was, I think, some intrigue of and some worry of, okay, where do they go from here with DeMarcus Cousins being out for presumably the postseason? Now that Andrew Bogut, your guy Kevon Looney, played as well as they can with doing so many different things, with Bogut setting screens, getting some rebounds, Looney really moving well off the ball and getting some good, easy baskets for some dunks, and then flexing out his mid-range a little bit.
Hot damn, Kevon Looney, the third splash brother tonight. And Bogut, the starting center in this game, we weren't sure on how Golden State was going to handle the rotations, in particular the second unit, which DeMarcus Cousins anchored. He would start all four quarters for this Warriors team. Andrew Bogut, I don't believe, I think he actually did do that. He started all four quarters tonight as the, not necessarily the anchor, because he doesn't bring the offensive firepower that DeMarcus Cousins does, but he more or less slid into the boogie role, and Kevon Looney stayed in his normal role and was absolutely fantastic. I didn't expect to see 25 minutes of Andrew Bogut in this game, but we got it, and every single one of them was rock solid. 14 rebounds, 5 assists, and that's something that we don't bring up a lot when it comes to Andrew Bogut. We mentioned his defensive prowess, and there's always some questions that come with that when you have a big, traditionally sized big man, particularly when you look at what's going on with the Utah Jazz and a guy like Rudy Gobert against James Harden. In this pick-and-roll league, is a big man like that still a viable option, particularly in the playoffs where we see teams get smaller and smaller as it goes along? But Bogut is about 20 pounds lighter than the last time we saw him in the NBA. Everyone says he's in a really good headspace, that he got away from us in the media for a while, and that helped him out a little bit. He started a family. He was in Australia. He was with his kids Monday through Thursday, only had to play one or two games a week down there, always on weekends. It was a six-month schedule, 28 games, something that the NBA might want to consider. I know that would give up a lot of money for everybody, but turn it into a quasi-NFL, and you only can only imagine how happy the players would be.
They wouldn't be happy because they wouldn't be making as much money.
it's a good point, but they would have more time for their other projects. And as we know from the superstars, they love their other projects. Nevertheless, he comes back. He's fresh. He says he's appreciative of the opportunity to play with the best players in the world. He thought he was going to be a cheerleader. He's going to carry a heavy load from here on out. It's the Clippers. I don't want to put too much stock into it. Houston in the next round, when the Warriors get there, is going to be an entirely different beast, and we'll address that then. But if this is the Andrew Bogut, if Thursday night is the Andrew Bogut that the Golden State Warriors are going to get for the rest of the playoffs, what a god, that was to steal Steve Kerr's term, what a godsend he has been.
Yeah, and you know what, like, they would have been better if DeMarcus hadn't gotten hurt, but I think that it would have been better in the long term. I think they're still going through some short-term pains of DeMarcus's conditioning still being a thing and then just him being used to playing in the postseason. So I think in the short term, like, the Warriors probably would have had an easier game tonight as opposed to if, you know, DeMarcus was still there, because there's always this kind of push-pull of, like, to what extent do they make DeMarcus adjust to them and how do they slow down to make him feel comfortable. And here they don't have to do anything. Like, Andrew's not an offensive focal point. He's just there to set screens and get some rebounds and play some defense. And he knows everything. Like, he knows the schemes. Right. And that was something that obviously not only was DeMarcus not as familiar with, but he's not as mobile as Andrew. So yeah. You saw a lot of things kind of become easier as a result.
So the way that the Clippers play these Warriors, they're trying to take away the three-point line. They're doing a lot of top blocking, all this stuff. Having a guy who can play in the high post is perfect. In fact, it wouldn't have been surprising had DeMarcus stayed healthy that they would have played more Bogut just because of his ability to run the offense through the high post. Klay got a lot of open shots in this game off of Andrew Bogut actions, if you will. We have taken too long, though, to really break down Kevin Durant's just insane basketball game. Andrew Bogut was not even close to the focus of this basketball game. This game started as the Kevin Durant show, and I guess it ended somewhere in the third quarter when he left the game for good. He was outstanding from the get-go. So much for all the conversation about him being aggressive or not. Whatever Kevin Durant wants to do on the basketball court, I've said this once, I've said it 100 times now, it's a good option. He can do whatever he wants out there. And tonight he decided that he needed to make an example out of every single player on the Clippers.
Yeah, and I think what was fascinating is we all knew this was coming. Like, it doesn't take a rocket science to figure it out, but it was a matter of, like, how was this going to come about? And it was a combination of Kevin was definitely looking for his shot. He was looking to score every time he got it, but his teammates were telling him to shoot. They're setting up, you know, more looks for him. But what I just find so amusing is the point of views can never be the same when it comes to Steve Kerr and Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant is simply saying, oh, coach just drew more plays for me. And then Steve Kerr saying there weren't any adjustments at all. He just played more aggressively. I love how they're never on the same page.
That is a 4.5-hour podcast special that we could do probably after a decision is made in July into the deep dive narratives of Kevin Durant versus Steve Kerr. Whether it was plays or him being more aggressive or a combination of the two, he was outstanding and out for blood. I'm constantly drawn to the fact that he seems so very angry when he has great games, and the juxtaposition of that with Stephen Curry, who is so very happy when he has great games. But alas, the yin and the yang coming together tonight. I mean, we don't even mention Stephen Curry in the opening here. 21 points in 20 minutes. Tell me how many guys can do that. But Kevin, outstanding, and this is the playoff KD that we have come to know and expect. The fact that it wasn't there in game two, I think he got an unfair amount of blame for the Warriors' collapse. It's not as if they were doing poorly when he only had five shots in the game. They had a 31-point lead. Nevertheless, when you don't play to the best of your ability as a superstar, you're going to get blame. He deserves some of it. And he came out and he shut everyone the hell up.
Yeah, and to your larger point, there were bigger factors involved as far as game two and game three of, hey, they were up by 31 points, and it was so much the Warriors were aware of this that Sharon Collins told Steve Kerr, hey, we're up by 31 points. Like, let's not take our foot off the gas pedal. I think when you're looking at everything else, turnovers were way down. You just saw the eye test that the intensity was still way up, really, until garbage time. And, you know, there was a point where Steve was comfortable with the outcome. I mean, Jacob Evans was getting mop-up duty and some other guys like Jordan Bell and Quinn Cook. But it didn't seem like, Steph Curry aside, four fouls again around the same time and Steve yanked him, that everything else seemed different with how they were playing in the third quarter. Like, game two, they seemed kind of checked out and whatever. Here, they felt like the Clippers could make this something if we let up.
Well, they learned the lesson the hard way. They went on a 14-0 run, if I remember correctly, in the third quarter, and didn't rest on their laurels after that point. And if Steve didn't have to get some serious minutes for guys outside of that like last 7 minutes of garbage time. But if the rotations weren't in such flux with DeMarcus's injury, he might have left his guys in there a little bit longer. He might have given regular rotation minutes to Curry and Durant in the fourth quarter just to further the point of when we're on, you're not beating us, and again, restoring order to the universe. Two things that stood out to me in sort of the minutiae and detail of this game, because again, it was a game that can be painted with very, very large, broad paintbrush. Kevin Durant was fantastic. The Warriors were fantastic defensively, and the Clippers don't stack up with them talent-wise. But two things that I noticed in this one, Montrezl Harrell got double-teamed a lot, particularly in the second half of this game. And Harrell was really good, again, in the first half of this game. He's been so good all series. The Warriors really didn't have an answer for him in the first half. Apparently, the answer was you have to double-team Montrezl Harrell, which is good for Montrezl Harrell, frankly. I didn't think that he'd be a guy who would have to be double-teamed in the NBA playoffs, but here we are. And the second thing, the team defense for the Warriors was off the charts good, and Kevin Durant is always going to be sort of the bell cow for that in the sense of, you know, Draymond Green's going to bring it. Steph Curry has been really good defensively as of late. This is a horribly officiated game. Both sides can agree on that too, which is a real rarity in the NBA playoffs. Doc Rivers and Steve Kerr were having conniptions simultaneously over subsequent plays. I mean, just technicals being handed out left and right. The league really does need to take a long, hard look at how technicals are being handed out in the NBA playoffs. It is going to have increased intensity. Teams are going to be a little bit chippier. This series was in no way out of control. And for the referees to be this, I don't know, stymie when it comes to guys having conversations or guys giving a little bit of lip, it was ridiculous. But the Warriors team defense didn't feel a sacrifice because of a tight whistle.
You know what a funny aside is that my understanding is Kevin Durant and Jamichael Green were talking with each other because they're talking about how bad the officiating was, and then there you go, they got double technicals for it. Yeah. Maybe they heard the conversation, were offended.
That might be it. That's the best excuse I've heard yet. But even Quinn Cook getting one in this game, and you're like, what? Sean Livingston couldn't explain his technical foul. If you look at the referees, it makes some sense. I'm not one who really breaks down the officials on a game-by-game basis like some, but I do think that the NBA needs to take a look at how quick to tee up dudes are. Because with Kevin Durant, I would imagine that tonight's technical foul will be rescinded, but that's three. He gets seven. And Kevin Durant's not a guy who exactly, you know, he's not Sean Livingston out there. He's going to play with emotion. He's going to be in the belly of the beast. He is going to put himself or find himself in situations where he's going to be yapping and he's going to go at dudes. And seven seems, if this is not rescinded for whatever reason, seven seems extremely plausible, perhaps even in the next round.
Right, and the broader part about the officiating, the technicals are one thing because they don't reset each round, which is always a topic for another day. I know that when teams go far, they always think that's unfair because you're being punished for being a good team. But besides that, the calls of just common fouls have been unbelievably bad, and it has gone against the kind of the unsaid definition of what an official is supposed to be. It's not supposed to really be about calling a foul or not. Like, you want to be consistent with it, but their main job is to make sure that the flow, there is a flow to the game, that there's not these constant interruptions. So does that mean that you want to let these guys play, or do you want to call it tightly? That's up to them. But it's all within the scope of how do they make this game run as smoothly as possible without me being in the way. And obviously, they've been completely in the way, and it's been unwatchable at times.
Yeah, the Game 3 was the worst example of that yet, and Game 2 was horrific. Game 3, the early examples, I mean, we had tic-tac fouls, if there have ever been tic-tac fouls. I mean, a slight grazing of the arm as an offensive foul. There was, I believe, three straight possessions with an offensive foul on the early goings of this. And then, to top it off, okay, fine, you say we're calling it tight today. Maybe too tight, but that's an argument to be had after the fact. But it wasn't consistent. Because then, from our vantage point, more or less on the baseline, there was one where Steph and Curry, and listen, Steph is never going to get officiated fairly. This is a long, long-held trope by Warriors fans. I hear it. Everyone agrees. It's not fair. But when you get two-arm tomahawk chopped across the forearm as you're going up for a layup, as another guy comes and smacks you on the head, and there's no foul because a ref's not in position to see it, like, you don't get to then say we're calling it tight on, you know, basic movement stuff and calling offensive fouls for a little bit of a push-off. It was just ridiculous, and I honestly hope that the NBA throws their absolute best referees in for Game 4, because this series deserves one game of consistent, solid refereeing. And what we've seen over the last two is a reason for a lot of people who are casual basketball fans, honestly, to turn it off. And I know that this series is over and it's lopsided, but this is the Golden State Warriors. This is the NBA's premier franchise. This is their number one eyeball getter. And if you're trying to watch these games, you're thinking to yourself, well, I didn't tune in to see a bunch of referees blow their whistle for a bunch of stuff. You have to call fouls. I get it. There are a lot of fouls in the playoffs, but it's about flow, as you mentioned, 100%. And the flow in the playoffs is to stop the two teams from beating the living hell out of each other. Anything shy of that, that's fair play. It's going to be getting. It's going to be got as much as it's gave. I don't know what the correct terminology for that is, but every team's going to have a little bit of give and get, and in this, the referees are just, they're clearly a third party on the court, and it's a mess. The fact that we're complaining about the referees, though, just symbolizes sort of how over this series is. I don't even know if we can get into any deeper detail. I mean, game one, they played pretty poorly and won by 17. Game two, they did the impossible and blew a 31-point lead, but they had to get that 31-point lead, as we keep saying. And then today, they played a really rock-solid game, and it was never in question. And frankly, they could have won by 60 if they just kept their foot on the pedal.
Yeah, another thing, though, that jumped out to me that I wonder how much will this apply for the rest of the series and future series. Andre Iguodala seemed to have a bigger role here, yeah, where he had a bigger defensive responsibility on Lou Williams, and guess what? He went 4 of 11 from the field, had a bigger scoring role, and, you know, why they didn't go to that in game two, a lot of it had to do with the fact that Steph and Durant were in foul trouble. Mm-hmm. Now, Steph's foul trouble didn't accumulate as quickly. It was more toward the later part of the third quarter, so they were able to use kind of that death lineup mm-hmm. at times, but I wouldn't be surprised if he starts leaning on Andre a lot more, because he knows how to guard guys. And Lou Williams, they were former teammates, and, you know, the other proposals haven't been working at all.
Andre knows what Lou wants to do. He knows all of his moves, so he's always sort of a step ahead or in stride, and he doesn't use his hands. I mean, he might as well just have his hands behind his back, and Lou Williams doesn't know what to do with it. Andre's so damn good. He'll never get the credit that he deserves for the I mean, even with an NBA Finals MVP to his name, it just the sort of deft things that he can do to affect a basketball game, very few guys in the NBA can do it. And it doesn't show up in a box score. I know. I'm saying it again. But he was just outstanding. My concern with Andre Iguodala, as always, is he going to have enough in the tank? He seemed pretty worn out after tonight's game, but maybe that's just because he was talking to us, and he's always worn out by us. Off day tomorrow for the Warriors, or Friday, I guess it's today now. Off day on Friday for the Warriors, so I imagine that Steph and Andre, maybe Clay, will be hitting the golf course here in L.A. Everyone else will be going to the beach. They will practice on Saturday, to my understanding, in Westwood at UCLA. Opportunity to keep them honest. And then Sunday, game four of this should be over series, 12:30 tip-off, which that's going to be a fascinating, great energy in the arena tonight. I mean, really good. Even when it was very clear that the Clippers were going to get their butts kicked within about the first 3 minutes, the energy stayed high. There was a nice chippiness to it all. Credit to the Clippers fans. They don't get a lot of respect down here. And there were more than I thought would be in attendance, all things considered. And they really brought the energy. Not a crazy atmosphere, but you could feed off of it a little bit. Be really interesting to see what Easter Sunday at 12:30 in the afternoon is going to do for this crowd.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not naive to all this, but I think that it's less likely that they're going to be a victim of nightlife in LA, the fact that it's the playoffs. But I think there is still the possibility of it just being an early start, and the fact that they're having a day off. I'm sure Saturday's practice will be pretty light. Mm-hmm. and the fact that they showed this game and they feel like, okay, everything's solved. I think two things that could be subject to change. Kevin Durant's still going to be a great player, but this was this narrative wrote itself. Like, everyone was anticipating Kevin was going to be going off. To what extent is he somewhere in the middle between game two and three? And then to what extent does the Warriors' intensity drop?
Yeah.
And so with that, that could make it a little bit more interesting. But to your point, this series should be over.
I just don't see any adjustments that the Clippers can make that's going to make this any more interesting. So as long as the Warriors want to play good basketball, and they seem like, again, they've learned the lesson, they will wane again, guaranteed. But I don't think it's coming anytime soon, given what happened on Monday. So it just feels like this is almost a perfunctory exercise in futility for the Clippers, and the Warriors just have to get through these next two games of not proving points, but clearly wiping the floor with a team that is far inferior to them. Maybe we'll see a big game from Klay Thompson. We haven't seen one of those yet. Feels like one of those is in the cards. Klay can't be sleeping for this long. He hasn't been poor, don't get me wrong, but Klay Thompson's due for a monster game. That's my prediction for game four. You got anything in the cooker there?
I could see that. Now, what's really funny is Steve was acting like everything's fine with Klay and he's doing everything well. But then when it was brought to his attention that Kevin said the entire team has been talking about how do they get good looks for Klay, the answer kind of changed. So I think one of the first world things that the Warriors might do is, hey, let's get Klay going. It's LA, and yeah, why not? Like, let's find a game within a game.
Well, so long as they keep Looney going, they're going to be A-okay. Should mention that Rich Kleiman and the entire 35 Ventures team was here tonight, and good times.
Speaking of that, that was very interesting. Rich, I got a good view of this. Rich Kleiman was talking very much at length with Joe Lacob throughout the game.
Yeah.
It was very impassioned. I couldn't tell if he was happy talking with him or upset about something. And then he started talking with Bob Myers.
Yeah.
Then when Kevin Durant was, his night was done, but at some point in the third quarter during a timeout, Kevin went over to Bob Myers. Like,
yeah,
you hate to be the guy that interprets stuff, mm-hmm, but it was so hard not to.
Yeah, this is another four-hour podcast special that we can have, but let me put it to you this way. Rich Kleiman was hanging out outside of the Warriors' locker room. Kevin, of course, saw him, dapped him up, really happy to see him, all that stuff. Bob Myers is coming past, says hello. There's another conversation then. And then Bob Myers is in the locker room. He's leaving the locker room. I'm talking to Marcus Thompson. Marcus Thompson gives him a little, what, you're just going to walk away talking on the phone and not talk to us? And he turns the phone around. Who is he talking to? Rich Kleiman. So I honestly don't think that anything's happening. I think that this is just the nature of the business. You constantly have to be talking to the superstar's agent. But in the constant ebb and flow that is the Kevin Durant free agency saga, it seems like if you wanted to make a bet on him coming back, now would be a good time to do it. Optimism is high. We'll see where we're at in 3 days. But days of our lives, this team.
And that captures why the Warriors have always been kind of just bracing the fact that no one really knows what Kevin might do. And if they're going off that high of a postseason run, like, maybe their stock is high, so he'll sign up for it. Who knows?
Ultimately, what I would really want is someone who's around this team, I just want to every day ask Draymond Green what he thinks is going to happen. And that's it. That's it. Just between me and him, Draymond, what's the weather report for today? He'll tell me the weather, and I'll just go, okay, that's all I need to know. Because everything else is BS. Draymond Green is the one truth with the Golden State Warriors. As much of a pain in the butt as he might be to some people on that team, he's the weather vane. And we'll leave it at that. We got a lot of podcast specials coming up.
tell them where to find it.
Yeah. Okay, so here's what you guys need to do, because all of this stuff is going to be printable soon. You need to subscribe to the San Jose Mercury News or the East Bay Times. The Bay Area News Group is the collective, and you can get in on either of those great, comprehensive publications with the Klay deal. That's 11 cents a day for 11 months, and you get a Warriors commemorative championship book called Three, with plenty of Mark Medina insight and stories from last year's championship run. We're currently working on this year's championship run, hoping that the Warriors can come through, and maybe a publisher too. But again, the Clay deal, 11 cents a day for 11 months. You're not going to get a better value than that in sports journalism or journalism in general. And if you want all of Mark's off-day musings, you can go and follow him on Twitter, MarkG_Medina. I don't think I'm going to tweet tomorrow. I say that, then I'm going to tweet 1,000 times. I'm at dkurtenbach, dkurtenbach. And if you are listening to this and you are not already subscribed to the Warriors HQ podcast, you need to get on that right now. Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Overcast, a podcast company that I haven't even thought up yet. If it is something that can receive audio content, you can probably get the Warriors HQ podcast, and you need to subscribe to it, and then you need to rate and review it. It really helps us with moving up the charts and getting more people to listen to this, and for better or for worse, that's what we're looking for here. So again, if you like it, share it with a friend, and remember to rate, review, subscribe, whatever it is you want to do so that other people who are not your friends know all about what we're doing here at the Warriors HQ podcast. Because again, if no one cares, we don't have to do this. It's 2 o'clock in the morning, man. We got better stuff to do. We got articles to write. People love that stuff. So we're going to take an off day tomorrow, sort of, kind of. We got a little bit of Steve Kerr availability. We'll be back at it after Sunday's game. A little matinee action for you. Enjoy the weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you then.